Hey everyone, I'm Adrian Wojnarowski, host of the Vertical Podcast with Woj, powered by digital media. And I'm joined today by Bobby Marks, the Vertical's front office insider who spent 20 years in the Nets, New Jersey, and then Brooklyn's front office, eventually as assistant general manager. And he understands this time of the year as well as anyone. December 15th, last summer's free agents can now officially be traded. And this really marks the beginning of serious trade talks and trade season in the NBA. Bobby and I run through most of the league, lots of players, a lot of teams, a lot of scenarios that may or may not exist out there. Now to my conversation with Vertical Front Office Insider, Bobby Marks. So I want to welcome in our Front Office Insider on the Vertical, 20 years of front office executive with the Nets, Bobby Marks. Bobby, how are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
Great, great. We're on the eve of the start of real substantive, possibly some trade talks in the league, trade conversations. Bobby, just for our listeners, why is December 15th impactful on the front office calendar?
Well, you're going to see over 100 free agents who were signed to contracts this summer. Now they're eligible to become traded. You know, once you sign that contract, you have a three-month or December 15th restriction. So now those guys – and there's still a bunch that are still not trade eligible. Players like DeMar DeRozan, Nicholas Batum, players who signed for 20% of – more of what the value of their contract from the year before can't be traded to January 15th. You see players like Carmelo Anthony, Dirk Nowitzki, LeBron James, they have no trade clause. But for this group of free agents from this past summer, now they get lumped into players who are under contract, and it just kind of opens up the playing field.
Bobby, in your time with the Nets and leading into December 15th, what's the exercise that you would go through in the days and weeks, and then once December 15th hit, when you're going down your list of 29 other teams, what are the conversations like? What are you trying to find out when you reach out to people this time of year?
Well, when I was in Brooklyn, we really started the process December 1st. That was a date that was circled around our calendar, and we would meet at least once a week and really just go through the rosters, and you start to see some trends, some teams who aren't playing that well, teams that have players on expiring contracts that you know will eventually have to move here. You really need to rely on your personnel department, your NBA personnel department, who are actually out there doing all of the legwork and doing the background and you're, it's almost like an extension of the draft where you're gathering information and you're, you know, relying on your coach. And also, you know, if you look at teams like, you know, Golden State and Cleveland, some of those teams who are playing really well right now, some teams like that, you don't need to do anything and tinker with that. But you do need to be aware of what's going on in the NBA. And, it's a weekly meetings to go over that personnel.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to a lot of GMs and executives here over the last, you know, several days and trying to get a sense of where everybody's head is headed into the 15th. And it's kind of like what you get each year, which is everybody says they want to do a deal. Everybody said, hey, I'm going to be aggressive. I want to find, but nobody else wants the deal. But it gets back to this, Bobby. There's nobody available again. And we go back to the last few years. You haven't seen a lot of, you know, high level or really impactful guys, not a lot over the last 2 to 3 years traded. Certainly in December, there was a Rondo trade 2 years ago that was impactful, less impactful for Dallas than they wanted it to be, but it was certainly a fairly big name. Teams, it just feels like again right now there's a somewhat of a paralysis in the league to going out and jumping in and doing something that will disrupt their team or will put the GM, maybe put them on the chopping block if it doesn't go well. There's fear. There's a lot of fear that plays into it too, I think, right now.
Well, you also have to look at the standings. There are a lot of teams that certainly still believe they have a chance of making the playoffs. If you look at out west, if it's Sacramento, and I know where they are right now, there's still a couple games out from the 8 seed, but for them, you're in a new building. You feel like, you know, if you can put together some type of run, you know, you can possibly get in. And, you know, the one trade that happened before December 15th was that Rudy Gay trade a couple years ago with Toronto, and that really changed their season around. So, if you're looking to do a deal and not a blockbuster deal, and if you're looking to move a player, is it a deal where you can maybe get two or three players, more of a rotational player that can help solidify? If you know what you see in the NBA right now, and I think it's evident on some of these back-to-backs, there's a real lack of depth in the NBA from a bench perspective. And can you look to try to, you know, solidify your bench, you know, put some games together where, you know, if you're a 500 team right now, can you kind of get some separation?
No, it's a great point, Bobby. And I think too, people want to immediately talk about, are there any great players available? And I know teams have been calling Indiana and they're going to ask about Paul George. And the answer is absolutely, positively no. He is not available. There's no conversation to be had. Don't even make offers to us. We're not moving Paul George. George has another year left on his deal. He could be a free agent in the summer of 2018. And their mindset in Indiana is to continue to try to build around Paul George and Miles Turner and try to find a combination around there that will get Paul to want to re-sign and stay there. Now, that being said, I think the Pacers are very much open for business with almost everybody else. I think they're in a place where they're willing to go out and continue to try to find some guys to put around him. But, and same with Sacramento, they haven't shown any inclination yet on DeMarcus Cousins. Again, he's not a free agent until 2018. And if I'm those teams, you know, Paul George and Cousins are two very different players, different people. And they're, you know, if you're Indiana, there's no scenario that you imagine where you could ever get value for him. You'll never get another player like Paul George. They don't come along, and they're going to do everything they can to try to re-sign him. But I don't think for either of those teams and those players, maybe the first time you really entertain it is this summer, you know, in June at the draft. If that player says to you, hey guys, there's zero chance I'm coming back next year, I'm leaving as a free agent. If that player tells you that, you still can call his bluff and push him to the trade deadline of next year, or you say, okay, is it time to part ways now? But I don't see any motivation for either of those teams to jump the gun a year and a half to almost 2 years before they're free agents.
Well, and that's why you see a lot of deals happening in the offseason, because you're not playing. You take the emotion out of it. So if you're Indiana's, you know, they've won a couple games here in a row, you know, and if they're getting calls, or even Sacramento, you know, you want to really have a clear sense as far as what direction the team is going. And if you look at how the draft has been, and, you know, you've studied it, it's such a crapshoot. And maybe this year changes. I know it potentially could have a good draft. And when you're looking at picks that could be traded, you don't know what you're going to get when it comes to June. And I think that was evident the other night in Los Angeles. We saw that Laker team go against a Knick team and with Porzingis but had some veterans on that team with Anthony and Rose. So it's such a challenge, and you're seeing it in Denver right now to try to build through the draft and sprinkle some of these veterans. So if you can land a top 15 player, you try to do so, but that's why they're so hard to get.
Going back to Sac for a minute, the one player who is going to have to move between now and the trade deadline in February is Rudy Gay. I don't think the Kings can make the mistake that New Orleans made last year with Ryan Anderson. Ryan Anderson was pretty clear he was not going to re-sign there, and they lost him for nothing. And that was someone they should have, especially at a team as devoid of assets and pieces as New Orleans is, they couldn't let him walk for nothing. Eric Gordon was different because of the injuries. He was probably not going to get back as much on a trade as Ryan Anderson was last year. I think they should regret it. They will regret that. But the Kings can't allow this to happen. And Rudy Gay will be the player. Oklahoma City, they got down to the wire before Cameron Payne's injury, had some very serious talks with Sac, and maybe got pretty close to something when they sell at Ilyasova, and then that fell apart when Cameron Payne got injured. But I think teams that are interested in Gay, and there's several, there's no question Oklahoma City, Indiana has had interest in him. Houston's had some periphery interest. I don't think they have the pieces to trade. And that's what I think the Kings are struggling with, is what can we get back for him? He's going to opt out of his deal in the summer. Anybody who trades for him wants to have a pretty good idea that they can re-sign him. But you're going to have to be ready to pay 18, 19, 20 million. At least that's what he's going to get on this market. What do the Kings do, Bobby? How do they manage this here between now and February? And again, do they just keep them right until the day of the trade deadline and just get the best offer? Because whatever deal they do make, they're going to be diminished in the short term. It's going to be more of a long play for them. And so that team will be lessened this year. So why not wait until you put it in a bidding right at the deadline?
Well, I think when you look at Sacramento, it's going to be the answer is how important is it to make the playoffs this year and probably face Golden State, or how important is it for the health of the franchise in the future? And if you're looking at Rudy Gay, and if there is a deal on the table, you know, I can certainly see that going up right up into that Thursday deadline, because we don't know where that Kings record's going to be. And I think where you look at the West right now, I think. And I know there's a long way to go, but it looks like these eight teams are almost locked in. You know, the Lakers haven't played well. They've been battling some injuries. Denver's been up and down. I don't see a run in Minnesota. Sacramento is there also. So the hard part is, though, Woj, is the expiring contract. Is that what are you willing to give up for that, knowing that you're going to have to pay that player a lot? And I saw it in Brooklyn, and I think we were in New Jersey then in 2012 when, you know, we made that deal for Gerald Wallace and we traded a lightly protected lottery pick. You acquired Wallace and you knew you had to sign him and you had really nobody to bid against, and you had to basically overpay him because you had given up a lottery pick. And that's a hard thing for some teams to swallow.
Yeah, I remember that deal, and I remember, I know, you know, Billy King's thought was that Deron Williams, you know, the organization wanted desperately to re-sign him that summer, and he was getting beat up. He was overwhelmed with the group that you had at that point, and that Billy felt that he needed somebody to come in who could just sort of be in there to fight and help Williams just get through to the end of that season. And I remember Billy saying he thought it was a 3 or 4 player draft. I think the pick was protected to 3. And as it turns out, the next pick would have been 6th, and Portland goes and gets Damian Lillard at 6th. And that's how it goes sometimes. But at that time, you weren't thinking about drafting a point guard. You were thinking about re-signing what you had hoped to be would be an all-star point guard.
No, you're right. And the trade was, and I think that's where you know, when you take a step back and you have a couple years to digest and I always say you take the blinders off and now you have no attachment to any team, is that it's always about the organization and it should never be about a player. And I know we had given up a lot for Williams, you know, the year before, but the Wallace deal was to, really, you know, sell home, for Williams when he became a free agent in July to re-sign, and as well as that, you know, that Joe Johnson trade, which I would have done, you know, 10 times over because I thought Joe was so good for us for those 2 years. But that's the hard part for organizations. And when you get to teams who haven't made the playoffs in a couple of years, we can look at Orlando, teams who have struggled like Washington, who have spent a lot of money. What type of deal can you go out and do, but won't, you know, risk the health of the franchise?
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
Bobby, here's a question for you. When you work for the Nets, when you work for a team, be honest, how much free gear, socks, shirts, shorts, could you use for Christmas presents? Like, how much stuff, like, could you just have, like, out of the drawer, and you could use them like stocking stuffers, that kind of stuff?
Well, I wish I had some of that right now.
I got an idea for you. Stance Socks. Stance Socks, the official on-court sock of the NBA, which means every player in the league plays every game in Stance, and front office executives wear Stance under their suits, black, green. Look at their shoes when you see them. Stance makes an amazing technical basketball sock, as well as an incredibly comfortable NBA casual line. So whether the fan in your life plays or cheers, there's something for all of them. The NBA collection features a variety of solid, team-specific, and special event styles, perfect for any basketball fan. And Stance's squad collection showcases styles designed by current players Dwayne Wade, James Harden, Klay Thompson, and Chandler Parsons. By underpinning its creative roots with a relentless focus on technical innovation, Stance has redefined what socks should feel like and the role they play in personal style. Stance ignited a movement of art and self-expression that has drawn athletes, performers, and iconic cultural influencers to the brand, a group they call the Punks and the Poets. They include Dwayne Wade, Rihanna, Bubba Watson, Willow Smith, Soko, James Harden, Chris Cole, and Big Sean. This holiday season, Stance launched its first collegiate collection and stoked out NCAA fans across the country. The collegiate styles make up a colorful collection for devoted fans of every generation, featuring iconic mascot, team logos, and signature school colors. Check out Stance's assortment of gift boxes and sock collections. Cutoff for Christmas delivery is December 20th with overnight shipping. So go explore the newest and best-selling collections for awesome gifts for yourself at stance.com. That's stance.com, S-T-A-N-C-E.com, Stance, the uncommon thread. And now back to more of my conversation with Vertical Front Office Insider, Bobby Marks. Bobby, back to the Kings for a moment. Perhaps in addition to a Rudy Gay deal between now and trade deadline in February, or maybe as part of a bigger deal, Ben McLemore, Kostas Koufos, those are players that I know the Kings have been talking with teams about. McLemore, they could not come to agreement on his rookie extension. He'll be a restricted free agent next summer, a high draft pick who's not panned out there. Teams are intrigued with him in that he was a player who really needed a good environment. He was somewhat of a late bloomer who I think people felt would really be influenced by where he went to, and it's not been a great environment there. So teams have really been trying to figure out how much is the player, how much is the environment, if a change of scenery would really benefit him. And he's shown some progress here the last couple of years. Those are the kind of guys that are out there right now. And we can go through, you know, a number of teams. I think the one thing that I've gotten from, you know, especially the good teams in both the East and West, they kind of say the same thing. And several have said to me, listen, we're not one player away from beating Cleveland, and we're not, and in the West, we're not a player, or we're not two players away from beating Golden State. So how much of our future do we want to mortgage to, you know, either get the eighth seed or chase seeding in the West or the East? You know, I think Toronto is the one team. The Clippers are in a tough spot because they've tried very hard to find a small forward. They don't have anything to trade. They just don't have assets. They don't have picks to give up. And their roster makes it hard to do a deal. Toronto's different. You know, they're the number two team in the East, Bobby, and they have a really good blend of all-star veterans, very productive starters, and then a good bench and some really interesting young players and draft picks. So I know Toronto's willing to, if they can go find a player who can fortify them against Cleveland, I think they're willing to give up a pick and maybe one of those young guys. And I think a comparable example for Masai Ujiri, their GM, is the deal he did in Denver when he brought in Andre Iguodala. That move, they felt in Denver, elevated them, made them a better team, and got them to 57 regular season wins. I think Toronto's open to that kind of deal, but I think what they're finding and what it's getting back to is that player just is not necessarily available out there on the market for them, despite their motivation to go out and invest in.
Well, and if you look at Toronto and if you look at the standings, I think you could make the biggest argument that they have a chance, if they are able to make a deal, to get up there closer to where Cleveland could, compared to if you're a Western Conference team, to get where Golden State or San Antonio. I don't see a deal out there for a Western Conference team to do so. And, you know, Toronto they have their own pick. They've got that Clipper pick this year. They've got a lot of young players that are, you know, you still have to figure out what their role is, in the future. So I think they're, for them, yeah, do you want it? Can you make a deal or would you like to make a deal? Sure. But what's going to be the cost to do so from a contract standpoint? You've got to figure out, Kyle Lowry will likely be a free agent this upcoming summer. You're locked into Damari Carroll for a long term, but you've got some of your nicer pieces with Valanciunas and Terrence Ross on some good deals. But it's such a challenge, and that's why when you see in-season trades happen more, it's less than what it is when we get into the off-season, just because teams are so reluctant to let go of what they have.
Yeah, and Toronto, and I think they feel, and rightly so, they can do nothing, and they might have a better team next year because, you know, DeMar DeRozan, you saw him make another leap this year. He's even better. Kyle Lowry right in his prime. And then you've got these young players who are getting better and better, they don't have to do anything, and they certainly don't have to mortgage their future. I just think they can be opportunistic if a player becomes available that they think, you know, can help close the gap, another veteran to throw at the Cavaliers. Golden State, and I know their mindset right now is, we're not doing any deal that makes us even 1% less likely to win a title. Like, they don't want to send that message to their team. You know, Andre Iguodala is going to be an interesting player for them, because if Kevin Durant opts out and is going to re-sign with his bird rights, it's very difficult for them to pay Iguodala anywhere near what his market value would be. And he and Sean Livingston, it's going to be difficult for them to keep them. But Iguodala is so important to that environment and to that team, more than just what he brings on the court. Anybody who's around them and within that organization, just they place great value with Andre and his role there. So they're willing to, I believe they'll ride out the season with him and try to figure it out after, and because they need him to win a title. And in some cases, a player like Iguodala, especially who's got one big or maybe one significant contract left in his career, would want to be traded somewhere where they get his bird rights, where they could have the money to pay him more when they re-sign him this summer. But the feeling around him is, hey, there's going to be so many teams with space this summer and that will have interest in him. They don't need him to be traded. And he wants to win another title. He doesn't want to go somewhere else now. He knows they're going to have a great chance to win it this year. And so I think Golden State right now, would they like to get a rim protector? Yes, they would like one very much. But they know that no one's just giving those away, and that the price they would have to pay, you know, you just don't want to mess that thing up. And so I think, you know, Golden State's in a situation where, you know, I think they're kind of landlocked right now on really doing anything, you know, despite they know where some of their deficiencies are. But I think they end up standing pat.
Well, and if I'm Golden State, I'm being more active come March 1st than I am at the end of February, when that, you know, the one players can't get bought out of their contract and can sign for the rest for the playoffs, like they were last year with Anderson Varejao. So, and I think that's where you see the difference from a team like Sacramento on an expiring, where you're almost forced to move a player, where if you're in Golden State, you've been to the finals two times in a row, you're certainly finals worthy this year with a chance to win it all, that you're riding out this and you'll figure your cap situation when it comes to the summer. We still don't know exactly the rules come for July. With Durant, with his cap hold, can you bring some of the Livingston and Iguodala's back? I think that's something you worry about when the season is over.
I think another team, Bobby, that's going to have a difficult decision to make, or a decision to make, is Miami with Goran Dragic. Had a big 34-point game against the Wizards this week, and still can, you know, has been a productive player. They gave up two first round picks for him, you know, that are going to Phoenix. Phoenix has coming in the future. And, you know, where is Miami right now? I mean, they're sort of caught in that in between place of, are we in a rebuild? Are we going to still try to piece this thing back together with some big swings in free agency? But I think they have to look with Dragic, and I think they are internally, and they will internally look to see what they could get for him, and then decide, is it enough to move him? And maybe just sort of cut their losses on that deal, try to at least get one pick back. But you're almost accepting that you made a mistake, because you gave up two picks and then you move him for one pick. You're sort of saying, maybe we shouldn't have done this deal.
Well, and I think it goes back to, and what I learned, you know, especially not, you know, being with the team for the last, you know, years, is that, and you kind of reflect on some of the trades you made, is that you can never predict the future. And I say that, you know, if you look at the Boston-Brooklyn deal that we did, you know, 3 years ago, and looking at what Miami did, and I think when Miami did that deal, you know, Bosch was healthy. You probably thought Wade would have been in the fold. You get Dragic, you know, you don't worry about the picks down the road, because you think you're going to keep on building a good team, potentially could have cap space in the future, but you didn't know Whiteside was going to explode like he did, you know, over the last couple of years. And the same with us in Brooklyn, where we did that deal with Boston, and you know, we didn't know, you know, Kidd was going to be gone the next year and Pierce wasn't going to be re-signed and players like Darren Williams would age as quickly as he would. And that's where I think teams get in a tough situation when there's really no safety net. If you look at what Cleveland did with the Channing Frye deal last year, or and then they traded Varejao to Portland and they gave up a first. Well, you can move first round picks that easily when you know you're going to have LeBron James and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love and that group, Tristan Thompson, under contract for the next 3 or 4 years. And that's where Miami, and we can say that's in Brooklyn, you know, could make the mistake where the future is so unpredictable.
Bobby, because of what it costs to go out and get a player in free agency, how much you have to spend to get, you know, we're seeing guys get max contracts and close to max contracts who they are not superstars. They are starters. But you have to overpay, typically almost always have to overpay in free agency. Has that put a greater premium on draft picks right now, cheap labor over the next several years? That do you sense teams are less apt to move picks to bring back veteran players outside of the complete win now, we're going to go for it kind of teams where there's only really a couple of them in any given year anyway?
Well, I think where Dallas is right now, that's a good example. A team that has given up a lot of picks in trades in the past. Some picks haven't worked out. You have a older roster. You have gone through free agency the last couple of years. Really have to get into a bidding war and miss out on guys. And now you're relying on, you know, guys kind of falling in your lap, Harrison Barnes this year, Wes Matthews, and free agency is such a challenge because it's where one of the few times where the player and the agent really dictate the process, unlike a trade or even in the draft. So when people say, well, how do you rank it? You know, I think you've got to put a premium on the draft, then come the trade market, and then free agency comes third because the Kevin Durants of the world in Golden State, those are the LaMarcus Aldridge in San Antonio. Those are the rare situations. It's usually you're building up your bench and you're adding some complementary pieces, even if it's a starter.
This is the Vertical Podcast with Woj.
And now a message from Capital One. Capital One knows you've got questions about your credit. You may be asking, who's really in charge of my credit score? Or how does my credit actually work? That's why Capital One created the CreditWise app, so you can check your credit score anytime you want right in the app. And it's free to everyone, Capital One customer or not. In fact, millions of CreditWise users have improved their score by 20 points or more, so download the app for free today. Availability depends on presence of credit history from TransUnion. CreditWise is offered by Capital One Bank USA NA. And now back to my conversation with Bobby Marks. Bobby, the one team that I think you can't talk about a trade in the league right now, if you're a team, without calling Denver. Denver has just a really interesting mix of like veterans with value, Danilo Gallinari, Wilson Chandler, Kenneth Faried, great group of young players in Emmanuel Mudiay, Nurkic, Jokic. There is a lot of talent there. The Nuggets have picks going forward. They have multiple picks still over the next several years. And Tim Connelly is aggressive. He's not afraid to make a deal, and I think he would love to get involved with, you know, they went hard in free agency. They flew the whole group, their whole front office and coaching staff, or Mike Malone and Josh Kroenke, their president, and Tim Connelly all came in to meet with Dwayne Wade. They want to try to get a star player there, and they're not afraid to cash in some of the assets that they've built up. Kind of gets back to this, is that star player available to them? But I just think Denver is an interesting team for anybody in the league who wants to do a deal, because you look at them and you say, there's a lot of talent. Tim Connelly's done a really good job of assembling a group there. I don't know if their record shows that, but I think you talk to people around the league and they really like the infrastructure there. And I just think they're going to be a part of every significant conversation in the league. You have to be calling them right now.
Well, in dealing with Tim while in Brooklyn, you're right. He is probably one of the most aggressive, you know, GMs, but fair. And I think that's kind of where the league has kind of shifted a little bit, where when you're doing deals, it's got to be, you know, a two-way street. And when you look at Denver, they've got a little bit of everything. They've got a little bit of everything that you can offer. If it's the veterans with Gallinari and Chandler and Nelson, they've got the draft picks. They've got the Memphis pick. They've got their own. They've got all these young players who they've really hit home runs on. And in the draft, we can talk about Jamal Murray, who's certainly off the table. And then you've got great contracts and players like Will Barton. So if you're a team and you are going to call Denver, I think you have to be realistic as far as what could possibly be available. And that's where, you know, Tim's strength is going to show over the next couple months here, is that where this record goes, especially if they continue to lose some games as far as from a patience level. And the one thing you don't want to do is, because you've done such a great job, is building through the draft, is that give away some of these pieces for a quick fix. And I don't think he'll do that. So, Denver, I would put right up there as far as one of the teams that certainly will be active. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if when we get to, you know, end of February, if there's something that doesn't appease them, that kind of just walk away from the table.
Yeah, and they're certainly looking at the long view there. Portland's another team still looking at the long view with a younger roster. And, you know, they had it. That payroll got jacked up this summer. Yes, partly because they did sign Evan Turner as a free agent, but they had to overpay to keep Alan Crabb, their own in restricted free agency. And, you know, Mo Harkless and, you know, was signed to an extension. But I think what Portland was able to do was, now they've got a lot of assets and they've got tradable assets on some pretty good contracts for them. So I think they could be patient here. They certainly have not defended well. Would they like somebody around the rim who can come in? You know, Festus Ezeli has not yet gotten healthy. Certainly they signed him to be helpful in that department. But that's a team, I think, with a lot of assets. But there's no one trade they're making to catch Golden State. There's probably no one trade they're making really to catch San Antonio or the Clippers this year. I think they can continue to be patient. But like Alan Crabb at $18 million a year, I don't know if they're going to go 4 years with him, with McCollum and Lillard. They've got two max starting guards. Are you really going to pay your third guard $18 million a year over the next several? But you had to match the offer sheet. Now, maybe next year or next summer, there's still somebody out there like Brooklyn who signed up to the offer sheet who needs a two guard. And now you're going to, maybe you move Crabb then to get some value for him. So I still think the Blazers are positioned pretty well here to keep building around this core and then sort of make some decisions about the guys they have, who they want to go forward with, and then who they use to move out.
Well, and for this summer, there's going to be certainly teams that are going to miss out on some of these free agents. And I almost look at restricted free agency from this past July as almost a carryover into the summer of 17. So if you're talking about the Alan Crabbs and the Myers Leonard, where, you know, with Neil O'Shea, you had to match the Crabb offer sheet and you had to bring Leonard back because they're an asset. And if you let them go, you weren't going to have cap space to go out and sign another player. So now you go into next summer and based on where this Portland team goes, which I certainly believe is a playoff team, and you get to next year, and then you got to figure out what Mason Plumlee. So with Crabb, you know, instead of, you know, it's 4 years, 72, now it's, you know, 3 for, you know, 54. So you lose a year, and there's a little bit more value there.
Yeah, and some of the other guys that are available, Bobby, and they've been the same names. Greg Monroe in Milwaukee, is there a taker there? They did have some talks with New Orleans early this year. Nothing got done there. Nerlens Noel in Philly, the research teams have done on him is not good. They don't get good reports back on their intel of how he's carried himself there, of his habits. It's not a great return. So there are teams willing to do a deal for him and bring him in, but they don't want to give up much. And so at some point there, Philly's got to make a decision. You know, what's the best we can get for him? I think at some point he probably moves too. And I think the Suns are interesting. You know, Brandon Knight, PJ Tucker, maybe even a Tyson Chandler. You know, they've got some veterans. They've got a really good young group. Devin Booker, and, you know, he's had some injuries, but TJ Warren, really, that was the guy everybody around there was talking about over the summer, and he got off to a good start before some injuries, and he'll be back soon. But I think the Suns are a team that have some decisions to make, and you wonder if ownership is willing to take a half step back to try to, you know, flip what they have now. They're not a playoff team. They weren't going to be a playoff team this year, but I think there really is some value, especially around Brandon Knight, who I don't know if that six-man role has really worked out for him the way he hoped it would or that they did. And I think Brandon Knight still has some, you know, some decent value around the league if he gets traded another time, although he's been moved a few times now.
Well, in Phoenix, it's a mirror of Denver. You have a you know, a mix of veterans with a young core and with also some assets, and you can talk about those Miami picks in the future. They've got to, you know, with the Chandler contract is not as bad as it was a year ago, you know, and I think when you look at it, you've got to make a decision on Alex Len this summer. You know, can you have two centers making $26-27 million combined? You know, another team with a young coach who is still trying to figure out things. So, you know, if I'm them, I'm looking for a deal, but I'm not forced to make a deal just because I need to get into the playoffs. I don't think they're in that. I believe they're not in that position, right now.
And Boston's sort of back where they always are. Danny Ainge wants to do a deal. I think they've underachieved because they were missing Al Horford for a significant stretch, and Kelly Olynyk was out, and they're starting to get their team back, you know, all together now here. But Boston's interesting, Bobby, in that, again, some good young players. They have draft picks that they can put in deals, and they have some veterans that hold some interest in places. I do wonder sometimes if Boston might overvalue some of the players they have compared to what the rest of the league sees in them. I think Marcus Smart might be starting to fall into that category. I mean, his name's been in some talks previously, and they've been pretty careful about who they'd give him up for. But, you know, Boston's, you know, Danny's wanted to strike and get, like everybody else, get that big star, get that big player. And Horford was a big play and a great get in free agency. You know, they can still keep their eye on Gordon Hayward from Utah, who's an unrestricted free agent this summer, who played for Brad Stevens at Butler. I think there's still, you know, strong hope in Utah that he'll want to stay there. That team has really come together. They've got a great young core in Utah. I know Gordon really likes playing for Quinn Snyder and likes the organization, but, you know, Boston's, I think they've got to keep their eye on that and sort of monitor it and see, can they make a run at him? Is he definitely going to re-sign there, or might he take a look around in free agency this summer? I think Boston's got to weigh all that with what kind of a deal they, you know, maybe try to get themselves involved with between now and the trade deadline.
Well, in Boston, the fruits of the Brooklyn trade is probably going to come to fruition this summer in the draft and possibly in 2018. And with where the Nets are right now, and, you know, they certainly play hard every night, but I don't know where they'll finish in the bottom, you know, probably bottom five, bottom six. So that potentially could be a very good pick. And they'll have cap space again, but it seems like it's deja vu, you know, from last year. And we'll probably talk about it when we get to February. Do you go out and try to get a guy on an expiring contract? But what are you going to want to risk some of these picks that you've kind of had in your back pocket? And I know it's probably burning a hole, but I think if you're Boston, you have to look at the big picture, where they were, in 2013, 14. And where they are now, it's still a team that is growing, albeit with some veterans, with Horford and Isaiah Thomas, but there are certainly a lot of young players on this roster.
And you mentioned the Nets, Bobby, and Brook Lopez will be another interesting case to watch. Brooklyn's not going to just give him away. Like, they were pretty aggressive in moving Thaddeus Young. They identified Caris LeVert from Michigan as a guy they wanted. They could get at 20. They really wanted him all along and were able to get him on draft day. But I think with Lopez, is there a team out there that's going to give up two first round picks for him? Or is there a team that's going to give a first, which potentially not just the back of the first round first, but a good first round pick and maybe a really good young player? Can you get that much for Lopez on the market? Does he still fetch that? The league's different. Teams don't play through a player like Brook now the way even maybe 5 years ago or 6 years ago they did in the league. What could you get for him?
Well, and that's where we come back and talk about timing. And when we look at that Mozgov trade from a couple of years ago when Cleveland acquired him and wound up giving up two firsts for him, I think that's the standard for, you know, at least for Lopez. He's shown that he's healthy the last few seasons. He's changed his game up. He's added a different element. Now he can, you know, make shoot three pointers. And you're right. If you're Brooklyn, you are certainly holding on to him and not just giving him away. And the one thing I know about Brook, and I think if you're the Nets and Sean Marks, is that you can almost wait until next season. And I know we talked about it earlier, that expiring contracts and the value decreases, but he's a creature of habit. So wherever team, if he were to be traded, if he were on an expiring contract, he does not like to move around. So it's almost like you're getting a player. Yeah, you would have to sell him on the organization and on that city, but it's not going to be a quick fix.
And you can appreciate this as well as anybody, Bobby. I just think Brook is so unique in this league. Think of how many guys who've been through as many coaches as he has with the Nets, as many different programs, and how many times he was nearly traded. I mean, he was in, you know this, Bobby, he was in deals that fell apart or didn't get done, and he comes back to work the next day, and he's not holding it against anybody, just comes in, he's the same guy, same personality. They value that in Brooklyn, and I think, like, you know, when you give a guy like this away or you trade him, you may not be able to find another like him. I just think his personality, he just kind of he's rolled with everything, where other guys would be absolute basket cases. They'd be complaining. They'd be, get me out of here. They'd be going off on people in the organization or in the media. He does none of it.
He doesn't. And I was there for when we drafted him in, him and Ryan Anderson in that draft. And, you know, he's been through the rumor mill, has certainly, and I know for sure he was close to be traded. If we can talk about, we could talk about Dwight. We could talk about the Oklahoma City trade that didn't happen, a couple years ago. That was very close to happening.
You're still waiting for Sam Presti to call you back, aren't you?
I am. I thought I am waiting for Reggie Jackson to put on a Brooklyn uniform. I think if he probably has Billy, he's probably still waiting by the phone too, which never happened. And we figured once 258 reached the clock, you know, then there was no deal on the table. But when you're talking about Brook, a good teammate, very coachable, is unique. Him and his brother, but is certainly talented. Is he your number one option? No, but can he be a good complementary player to a very good team? I believe so.
Bobby, sit tight for a minute if you can. I want to tell our listeners about SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a very confusing process for a very long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show that you want to go to. And none of those other ticket sites seem to want to change that, but SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. And it's pretty neat how they do it too. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you save time and never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and they'll let you know if the ticket prices fall. And even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. I know Bobby does too. And we use it all the time because it's simple and it works. And best of all, SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. They show you the full ticket price from start to finish and never try to bamboozle you with huge fees on the checkout page. Now listen closely to this next part because it's real important. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. That's $20 right into your pocket. And to get it, all you've got to do is this. Download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, then enter promo code WOJ, W-O-J. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. It does not get any easier than that. So please support SeatGeek the way they support us here at the Vertical Podcast. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code WOJ today. Bobby, what's the last concert you saw?
It's got to be Bon Jovi, I want to say. Maybe even Springsteen. I'm going back to my Jersey roots here.
Yeah, those are two shocking revelations for a Jersey guy. Bobby, look around the league I haven't looked it up. I don't remember the last season when there was not a coach fired. It's conceivable there will not be a coach fired this year. The places where teams had pretty good expectations or needed to win, most of those coaches are new and they're at the beginnings of long-term, you know, fairly high money deals. The Heat really this year, is on front offices. And I think you may see more changes in the front offices. It's as unique of a year in that way as I can remember.
Well, and it goes in cycles, and we have, you got 10 new head coaches, and not including, Ty Lue and Earl Watson and Cleveland and Phoenix. And you can make an argument, each of those new coaches have certainly done a good job in different situations, whether it be in Memphis with Dave Fizdale and the loss of Conley and how he's been able to keep that team afloat, and in New York with Hornacek, and he's got that team playing really well.
Walton in LA.
Luke Walton in LA, Kenny Atkins. I mean, there's been a lot of good young coach and a lot of coaches who, there's their first go at it here. So, you're starting to see a lot more patience with front offices. And I always say that, when you go through the hiring process is that if you're a GM, you really only have, one mulligan. And when you hire somebody and if it doesn't work, maybe 2 or 3 years later and to try to, make another change, I think that kind of, puts you in a bad light, and it's so hard for players to, we've seen in Sacramento, a team that hasn't made the playoffs, that when you keep on rotating the door with new head coaches and you bring in different philosophies every year, it really sets organizations back afar.
And look too, Bobby, at the guys who've had some early success here, three first time head coaches, and there's some common denominators. I had Luke Walton on the podcast last week. He taped it with me on the day of that Houston game. They got beat by about 80. I don't think he's ever sitting down on a game day again. But the common denominator among Luke Walton and Kenny Atkinson in Brooklyn and David Fizdale in Memphis, guys who are communicators, who have built relationships with their players, who aren't coming in. These are all tough-minded guys and their standards and that term players coach gets thrown around, and usually it sort of means guys get walked over. But these are guys who really are spending time building relationships with their guys. They're not dictators. And you've seen at different levels, no one's achieved more than what the Grizzlies have done. It's been remarkable. But he had an interesting roster of some, very all-star established veterans, and then some young guys there, and then the Lakers, very young team, and then Brooklyn, really just a Sean Marks doing what he can to put the piece together, given the limited options he has to draft players, to do some things. The group they put together, they compete and play hard, and they're in it every night. But these things will go in trends, and I don't think that's going to be lost on the rest of the league about the approach of these coaches and how, initially anyway, you're seeing some success with this group. It's a different player in the NBA than it was 10 years ago or 8 years ago or seven even. And you can't just walk in, fold your arms, and yell at people. It doesn't work anymore.
No, it doesn't. And these are the guys who are in the arena at 4:30 for a 7:30 game and are working out players that nobody sees. They are the coaches who come in on a Sunday on an off day when a James Harden or a Brooke Lopez or a Luol Deng want to get some extra work on, and who have really, really started from the player development role and have, as you said, built relationships. And that goes a long way when you are in some of these close games and you get into a fourth quarter. And we've seen it in Memphis, and we even saw it in the Brooklyn-Houston game from a few nights ago where, a Nets team that's down to a very good Rocket team, and they just keep on fighting because they are starting to believe what the coach has started to preach here.
No, there's no question. It's a there's a great crop of really good young coaches. It's funny. You talk to other assistant coaches around the league, and they are rooting for Luke Walton. They are rooting for Kenny Atkinson. They're rooting for David Fizdale because – owners and GMs see those guys have success, and then they start reaching for, whether it's David Vanterpool in Portland or, whoever that next group of really good young head coaching candidates, they're going to root for these guys. And the early success they've had is, it starts to pave that path for them. Bobby, listen, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking the time out today. I know we will, we'll catch up soon and maybe we'll start seeing some deals here with the calendar turning to the 15th.
I hope so. My calculator is getting some dust on here, so I need to get that out soon.
Outstanding. Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks, Woj.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Vertical Podcast with Woj. A big thank you to our guest today, Vertical Front Office Insider Bobby Marks. Remember to subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to the podcast, And be sure to subscribe to The Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix and The Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick. You can find us on thevertical.com, iTunes, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher. And you can now hear The Vertical Podcast Network every weekday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the Sirius XM app on Channel 967. We'd also like to take a moment to thank today's sponsors, Stance, SeatGeek, and Capital One. Be sure to support them the way they support us here at The Vertical Podcast. We'll catch you next time.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.